Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, colleagues, and very good afternoon to members of the delegation. Thank you very much for your answers yesterday and today, and in particular for the very clear structure in which you presented the information, which made it so much easier to follow. And right at the outset, let me say how gratified I am that you've given us the assurance that any proposed Article 23 legislation will follow the requirements of consultation. So I'm sure in conformity with the convention and expectations of civil society, that consultation will be widespread, meaningful, and the results reflected in the ultimate draft bill. So thank you very much for that. Just some quick clarification, though, of some other points. In particular, I didn't get an answer to the question, which remains very important for us. Where enforcement of the NSL by law enforcement from the mainland results in violations of fundamental rights, or let's say alleged violations even of rights, protection against torture, for instance, or arbitrary arrest, what remedy exists for residents of Hong Kong who are caught up or who are subject to such violations? Where can they seek legal redress? Thank you for your clarification this morning of the your position on the NHRI, but may I just refer to my comments yesterday, and as given the examples that we provided, any NHRI would be, I would say, necessary because and not duplicate, because there is, as you just said, no, the EOC is not an NHRI. They are these piecemeal bodies, and as my example said, they lack effective powers, and they're arguably not independent, as demonstrated from the lack of status given to the EOC under the Paris Principles. So again, I would repeat my question whether the Hong Kong government would consider a comprehensive NHRI with a comprehensive mandate, effective powers, and sufficient independence. Finally, could you please clarify for us, as I asked yesterday, especially given your assurances that Article 39 obligations will be respected, could you please assure us that NGOs participating in this periodic review will not be charged under the NSL or subject to any other victimization for their participation? So I turn now to today's questions, and I will deal with issue 10 on the right to life and protection against torture. I thank you for the answers that you provided to this issue in the replies that we received. Unfortunately, however, publicly available information contradicts the replies and indicates that the Hong Kong police force has consistently violated UN principles on the use of force and international human rights standards, including those contained in our General Comment 37, in the course of its response to public protests. Because of the wide discretion on the part of law enforcement to characterize assemblies as riots, thereby engaging riot control agents and enhance methods in response, those responses have frequently been excessive, involving the indiscriminate use of less lethal weapons and the use of chemical substances past their expiry date, actions which result in serious injuries, not just against demonstrators, but also against bystanders, commuters, journalists. Please explain how such responses are consistent with UN guidelines on the use of force and international human rights standards. Will the Hong Kong government commit to ensuring that force is resorted to only where necessary and no other means are available, and especially so in the case of lethal force? I note your reply that the police response to the siege at City University of Hong Kong was conducted to disperse so-called rioters. However, the commander-in-chief of the riot police was recorded by the media instructing his subordinates to aim for and shoot at protesters' heads. This evidences a disregard for human life and safety and violates not just human rights principles, but basic common law standards regarding the proportionate use of defensive action. Kindly explain the justification for such police methods. How can they be reconciled with your repeated assurances that Article 39 of the Basic Law, which applies the ICCPR throughout the SAR, continues to be respected? Crucially, can you tell us whether such an instruction to shoot at the heads of protesters constitute lawful authority for subordinate officers as stipulated in Section 3.4 of the Crimes Torture Ordinance? Finally, I wish to refer to your information in the fourth periodic report that the non-derogable character of the prohibition of torture is clearly provided for in Section 5.2c of the Hong Kong Bill of Rights Ordinance, and that this has been recognized by the courts in various rulings. Could you please provide us with examples of those court rulings in which this non-derogable character of the prohibition of torture has in fact been recognized? Thank you very much, and I look forward to your replies.